What's that?
You're the Environment, Economic Development, and Agriculture Division for Monday, February 2nd, 2015, i.e. Groundhog's Day will come to order.
Let's only do this once.
Yeah.
People want cake. We have some cake left over from the press reception that was here earlier, so just come in the back door and sneak behind me and grab some if you want some, because there's lots of it left over. And this may be a continual problem this year of not being able to get started on time because of things that are happening in these rooms, because we don't have enough rooms this year, but we'll have to deal with it, I guess. So so today we're going to have the overview of the governor's budget recommendation for the Minnesota Zoo. So why don't you go ahead and start not only with the your base budget, but I think there's a deficiency that's maybe coming up tonight in our finance committee, so maybe you can talk about that a little bit too after you get done with the budget. So, okay. So go ahead, just say your name for the record, Mr. Emke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Lee Emke. I'm the president and director of the Minnesota Zoo, and with me is Mary Robison, our vice president for finance and administration. It's my pleasure to give you a kind of an overview of the zoo, and then that will lead into our appropriations request, both for this fiscal year and for the next biennium. Just a quick overview, and again, for those of you who are unable to see the PowerPoint screen, there is a copy of the presentation in your materials, I believe, and you can follow along if that's helpful. The Minnesota Zoo, which opened in 1978, has a mission which we've recently kind of reaffirmed, and that mission is to connect people, animals, and the natural world to save wildlife. And I think I want to step kind of to a bigger picture of why do zoos exist? Why do we have zoos in the 21st century? And I think some of the reasons are self-evident. Zoos are places of learning and discovery. Perhaps less self-evident, but more critical as we move along into the future, is that zoos are a force for conservation. And we are certainly a place for families. We're one of the very few institutions that provides activities that the entire family can enjoy together. And I think importantly for all of you is that zoos can be and often are economic engines for their communities. And this is a fact that I always like to bring out, which is that Americans love zoos. We all, most of us watched the Super Bowl last night. But the reality is if you add up all of the attendance at the accredited zoos in the U.S. on an annual basis, it actually exceeds the attendance at all major league sporting events combined. We are available to...
What is that number?
In the U.S., it's about 180 million a year. For the accredited zoos within the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. And it's a global phenomenon as well. About 700 million people a year visit zoos that are associated with the World Association of Zoos and Aquariums, which I actually have the privilege of being the president of this year and next. The Minnesota Zoo specifically has a significant impact on the state and the region. We've averaged about 1.2 million guests a year in recent years. That's actually up considerably from where we were 10 years ago, which was under a million a year. And a University of Minnesota study that was conducted a couple of years ago estimated the economic impact of the zoo's operations, and that doesn't even include the construction impact, at $146 million a year in direct and indirect benefits for the state. Obviously, the 7-county metro being a focal point for that, but it does extend to the entire state of Minnesota. And given our general fund appropriation of about $5.4 million a year currently, that's a $26 return on every dollar that's invested by the state on an annual basis. And this is a kind of a historical picture of where the support for the zoo has come over time. We are a state agency, and in the early days of the zoo, back in the 80s, we received the majority of our operating budget from the state general fund appropriation, as high as 60% back in the mid-80s. That has declined both as a real number and as a percentage over the years, and it's now currently at 22% of our total budget, which is about $25 million a year. The remainder of that we generate ourselves through earned revenue streams, attendance, membership, many other kind of the small businesses that we operate as part of the zoo, contributed income through the Minnesota Zoo Foundation, which is our 501c3 support group, and other sources, including the Legacy Fund, which has provided significant new support for us over the last several years. So you can see there's been a complete shift in the overall funding model for the zoo. We're quite proud of the fact that we've been able to absorb the reduction in support from the state over the years, but this year we do believe we've reached a point where we need to see a recalibration and readjustment to make this public-private partnership continued success. And I do talk about public-private partnership. We work very hard with corporations and foundations and individuals to generate support for the zoo, both in terms of contributed revenue, sponsorships, and other partnerships. And this slide, I think, just gives you a sample of the kinds of statewide partnerships that we've developed. I think all of these companies see the value of the zoo to the state and to their businesses, and the association of these companies with the zoo are very clearly a positive win-win situation for them and for us. We have more than doubled the contributed income to the zoo over the last 10 years, which has been fantastic. But as I'll mention, it's still a relatively small portion of our overall budget. So the deficiency that we're currently facing is something we can't fundraise our way out of. We will continue to grow fundraising, but we are looking to the state for additional support. And why the state? We are one of only two state-owned and operated zoos in the country, and as a result, we take very seriously our role as a state entity and providing service to the entire state. We have visitors and members from just about every county in the state, as this map demonstrates. We have school groups that visit from all corners of Minnesota, and more, those are supported through underwritten funds from some of the corporations I showed on the previous slide. So we're finding ways to bring schools to the zoo even when their resources are being limited. We've recently instituted some distance learning programs so that we can virtually reach the entire state through technology, and that's growing very rapidly as a way to bring the content that we provide at the zoo to schools around the state. And then our Zoomobile program is kind of our premier outreach effort, which takes live animals and educators in a van, and we go all over the state of Minnesota. Last year, more than 50,000 people were able to experience a Zoomobile program outside of the zoo. So we're finding lots of different ways to serve the state as the state's zoo, although obviously we are located in Apple Valley and in the Twin Cities metro region. If you look at the numbers of all those students who are served, whether at the zoo or through our outreach programs, we're the largest environmental education provider in the state in terms of numbers of individuals served. Programs at the zoo, some are formal, some are informal, but almost 500,000 people last year participated in one way or another in our education programming. That programming is designed to work with the requirements and the goals of the school system so that we are really an integral part of the education system focused on science, technology, engineering, and math, as well as on environmental issues. And I think more and more critically, our zoo and zoos generally are deeply involved in conservation of endangered species through programs at the zoo, doing breeding programs in association with other zoos, and in supporting field research and field conservation here in Minnesota and around the world. We have some very significant programs as far away as Africa and Indonesia. All of those are completely privately supported through funds generated by the Minnesota Zoo Foundation. But increasingly, in the last couple of years, we've been doing a lot more Minnesota-based conservation, largely funded through the Legacy Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, which has allowed us to do some, we think, very important work with looking at the situation with the moose in northern Minnesota, prairie landscapes and prairie butterflies, working with the DNR on breeding and reintroducing bison to state parks, just to name a few examples. So conservation is at the core of our mission. We believe we have both the opportunity and the obligation to provide that, and we're doing it largely through fundraising that are avenues that are outside of the general fund that we'll be talking about here. I think it's important for you as senators to recognize that our zoo is widely recognized as one of the leading zoos in the world. Certainly in the informal rankings that come out every year, we're often near or in the top 10 of U.S. zoos, and that is a reputation that extends internationally as well for the conservation programs, for the education efforts, and for the quality of the exhibits and the offerings to the public. I think the founders of the Minnesota Zoo back in the 1970s really did see this as an opportunity to have a world-class institution, I believe that has happened.
How big is that bear in that picture? Look at the size of that head.
I think the bear in the picture, I believe that's Kenai, one of our big Alaskan brown bears, who last time we weighed him was about 900 pounds. So it's wintertime now, though, so he's losing weight because he's not quite as active, but big bear. And you can see, again, the quality of the exhibit experience has really improved. From the early years of the zoo, when people used to say, well, it looks great for the animals, but I'd like to see them, we've done a lot of work to create great natural spaces for animals, but also create these up-close opportunities for our guests.
How much does he eat a day?
It depends on the time of year. He will
hungry time.
Often eat 15 pounds in the fall when he's trying to put on weight getting ready for winter. So it's quite a bit, although most of it is dog food, surprisingly. So that's the overview of our zoo, and happy to take any other questions about that as they come up. But the focus of the hearing today is on our current financial situation and where we are now and what we need to do to fix it. What we've seen in the last couple of years is that we have increasingly growing fixed costs. Most of the costs at the zoo are not things that we have a lot of control over. Particularly compensation, utilities, and obviously food for our animals. As a reaction to those cost pressures, we have been very aggressive in our attendance projections and providing offerings to try to drive attendance, which drives revenue. And the last couple of years, we have not met some of those aggressive goals. And the combination of the increased costs and the decreased revenues have led us to the current situation, where we are in deficit at about $1.5 million for the current fiscal year. The variables that have resulted in that are many. We know that we've had the same kind of weather situations that have impacted many other entities in the state, impacted the zoo. The polar vortex really hit our winter attendance. The rainy spring hit our busy season at the end of last fiscal year, beginning of this one. Basically, we're here to ask for a relatively small investment by the state that will have an enormous impact on our future opportunity to continue to thrive. Again, let's look at the kind of historically. Our current general fund appropriation level, $5.425 million, is as low as it's been in many years and covers only 22% of our total operating budget. If you look nationally at all zoos, which have many different kinds of governance models, but on the average, they receive 33 or 34% of their operating support from a public entity, whether that's a city, county, regional, district, or state. And so although we are a state agency and a creature of the state, we're receiving far less than that national average for general operating support. We know that our expenses are going to continue to rise. The basic, again, compensation costs and just general inflation will continue to be an upward pressure on our budget. And as we're increasingly reliant on our earned revenue stream, we are more subject to the variability of that stream, things like weather and competition and other things that impact that. I mentioned the charitable giving part, and our foundation has grown significantly, the amount of money they raise and contribute to the zoo's general operating budget. They also generate capital money for new projects and support programs that are outside of our operating budget. That has grown significantly, but it's only about 10% of our current operating budget, so we can't really rely on that as an avenue to make up this deficit. This pie chart gives you an overall sense in a different way of the revenue stream coming into the zoo. The majority, as you can see, 60%, is earned revenue. The contributions, about 9 or 10%. Other public support, including the legacy amendment funds, generate about 10%. And then 22% is the general fund appropriation. That was the budget at the beginning of this fiscal year. And so we look at earned revenue as really the key driver in many ways to our success during the year. The last fiscal, you can see a general trend here in this graph. We have grown attendance pretty significantly over the last 10 years, from under a million a year to an average of about 1.25 a year. There is, however, some variation in that for the reasons that I've just mentioned, and we've seen in the last 2 years in particular a beginning of a bit of a decline in that overall number. To put it in context, though, 2014, which you can see here, was actually one of the 10 best years in the history of the zoo for attendance. So I don't believe there's any way we can characterize this
as the
zoo.
Can you explain the blue bars, because I can't see the writing's too small. What's on the side and what's on?
Okay, on the left-hand side is the attendance figure, and it's a million is sort of the baseline number on the far left, and you can see it's gone up to as high as 1.27 million, okay. Or 1.37 million. Down below are the years, the fiscal years. And then the text up above show when we've opened major new exhibits, we have seen spikes in attendance. When we opened Russia's Grizzly Coast back in 2008, we saw a very significant increase. And then several years ago now, when we opened the Penguins and had a dinosaur exhibit, we saw our all-time highest attendance in 2012. So, again, an overall trend up, but some variability, and we're very vulnerable to that variability now, given the thin margin we have between our costs and these revenue streams.
Senator Saxon.
thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Emke, I know you told us that we had that there was $180 million going to all the zoos and aquariums. But just to calm our fears here, the national trend, is the national trend still good for zoos and aquariums with the millennials and the Gen X? And
Mr. Chair, okay. Senator Saxon, actually the trend overall has been continued growth nationally. You do see regional and local differences, and it really depends on all the variables that impact us. Are there new exhibits that are available to the guests? What's the competition in town? What's the weather been like? We're a very weather-dependent operation, as you can see. So I think we're certainly seeing continued overall growth in visitation to zoos and aquariums, and I believe the kind of thing that we offer will have appeal not just to us baby boomers, but to the generations who are following us.
Would a dome help? Just kidding. Okay, I'm just kidding. Anybody who's listening, Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering, in last year in the capital investment bill, we had $12 million for the Minnesota Zoo, and I'm wondering if you're going to plan to see a little bit of an uptick related to that as well.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scalzi, yes, we're certainly hoping to see some results from that great investment by the state. We'll be reopening Discovery Bay this spring using some of the funds that were included in that allocation. It'll feature a wonderful group of Hawaiian monk seals in a completely new exhibit, as well as retooling really the entire space, which is one of our major attractions at the zoo, which has been relatively low-key for the last couple of years. So we are looking for a modest impact from that investment. And then some of the other funds that were allocated to us last year are the first phase, basically the planning and design phase, for something called Heart of the Zoo 2, which will feature a new snow monkey exhibit, a new meerkat exhibit, and a new entry area, which we believe will also have a positive impact on our attendance when it's completed, hopefully in a couple of years.
Just as a follow-up, I know the 22% that we're providing for a $25 million budget. What do you recall what your budget was in 1985 when we funded 60% of that? And I know the zoo has grown, so I was just kind of curious what that was.
We have to get back to you on the 85
okay.
number, but
okay.
I'll take note.
Thank you.
Okay. Are you looking it up or?
No, I'm sorry. I'd have to get back to you.
Okay. Just say your name for the record so that we have your name on record.
I'm sorry. Mary Robison, Chief Financial Officer for the Minnesota Zoo.
Okay. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so when you look at the attendance and earned revenue, you talk about the price ticket prices? Is that what you're referring to there? Have they gone up, or where are we with that? Or when was the last time you had an increase? Is it significant, or?
Mr. Ramke.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I believe our last price increase was 3 years ago, and it went to $18 for adults and $12 for children, although we offer many discounted opportunities and memberships and other ways that people can access the zoo. That forms a large component of that earned revenue. In fact, at this point, we have about 40,000 households that are members of the zoo, and so that's about half of the revenue, the other half being the ticket sales, et cetera. Actually, not quite half, but those are the two largest components of our revenue stream. But we also have commissions from our food and gift operation and a number of behind-the-scenes tours. Our concert series generates revenue. There's a number of small revenue streams, but the primary driver is the general attendance and our membership rate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for a follow-up. If I could, so what kind of an increase was that in ticket prices? And I should know this, but does the local community donate any money at all, or the county or city, or have they ever been asked or required to, or is that a discussion ever went on? I'm trying to remember if we've ever had that discussion over the years that I've been here.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, the increase, I believe, was a $2 increase on all admission types, both children, seniors, and adults, that 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. To your other question, we do not receive any direct financial support from Dakota County or the City of Apple Valley. The county actually donated the land that we sit on to the state of Minnesota for the original construction, that's been the primary sure. level of support we've received from them.
Thank you.
Okay. So when you had $1.2 million, did you cash flow then? When you had $1.2 million people attending, were you still in deficit, or were you cash flowing then?
Mr. Chair, we were in deficit after the last.
Because that $1.2 million is the biggest number of attendance you've had?
Mr. Chair, no. We actually had almost $1.4 million in 2012, so it has gone down a little bit from that point.
Okay, I thought 1.2 was largest. I still can't see those numbers, so yes. I got no idea what they are. But anyway, so was $1.4 million enough for you to not be in deficit?
Mr. Chair, if we were to achieve $1.4 million, that would probably do much of the trick for us. But obviously, in order to achieve that, we have to have things to offer. We typically see, again, these big attendance spikes come when you have a major new exhibit to open, which we do not have in the next several years.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair, in answer to your question, last fiscal year, our deficit was $1.2 million.
Oh. Were they mixing millions of dollars with millions of people?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It was both the number of attendants and our deficit.
Okay. Senator Saxon.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe if you went out there and as a fundraiser swam around with bears, that'd do it.
Yeah, well, make that motion.
Based on the way I swim.
I got a 20.
Senator Osmond. Go ahead, chime in.
You can swim. Do a test
run. All right. Okay. Did we cover the budgets?
Well, I have a couple of other points. This one may be just as hard to read as the last slide, but this shows our overall revenue trends over the last 10 years by source. And the top line shows that overall growth in revenue at the zoo over the decade. The next line down is our earned revenue, which you can see is the majority of our total revenue and has grown the most quickly, significantly, of all of our revenue streams over that period. You do see the slight decline in the last 2 years based on the attendance not achieving record levels. The third line down, the bluish line, is the state general fund appropriation. And that's where, obviously, our focus here today is that there was a time when that was about, significantly more than a third of our total budget. And as recently as 2009, it was at that one-third of our total operating budget level, and it was $7.2 million a year in real dollars. Today, that's $5.4 million, and only 22%. So you can see that has gone down rather steeply in just the last few years. The next line below that, relatively small, also kind of bluish or purplish, is the contributed income coming from the Minnesota Zoo Foundation. As you can see, a relatively small portion of our total budget, but has doubled over the last decade. We'll continue to be aggressive with that, but I just want to continue to make the point that we are not going to be able to fundraise our way out of the current deficit. We need ongoing state support. The final line is the legacy arts and cultural heritage funding that we've been receiving. We're extremely grateful for that funding. It's totaled $1.75 million a year in each of the last 2 years of the biennium. That has allowed us to grow programs and add conservation and especially education programming at the zoo that we always wanted to do. But following constitutional guidelines, we are unable to use those funds to help with the general operations of the zoo, keeping the lights on, keeping our basic staff employed, et cetera. Those are outside of the scope of those funds. They've added to the value of the zoo experience, absolutely, but are not part of the solution for our current deficit. So our current mix, things that we're concerned about. We do believe our price currently, until we have major new offerings at the zoo, is at a ceiling. We don't believe we can continue to raise the cost of visitors coming into the zoo without seeing a negative impact on both attendance and revenue. I've mentioned the charitable contributions line. We're pushing for a significant increase even this year, more than a 10% increase. That's great. We're going to continue to grow that. It's not the overall answer either. It's really this proportionality, the relatively small size of the state's general fund appropriation at this point make it very difficult for us to manage the variability in our earned revenue stream. So we are looking to an increase, both the deficiency appropriation for this year and an increase in the upcoming biennium to get us back to that, generally, that one-third of our operating budget that is the national average for zoos and that this zoo was funded at by the state until quite recently. The cost drivers, I think I've touched on this, but this pie chart shows where the money goes, the revenue we generate, how is it spent. The majority of it is for salaries and benefits for the employee core at the zoo, almost 70%, especially if you include the MIN IT staff who are actually not represented in that number. They're now considered a purchase service as part of the agency agreement.
When you said 1,700 employees, is that direct employees at the zoo or is that direct and indirect?
Mr. Chair, the 1,700 number was jobs generated by the operation of the zoo. We actually have closer to 350 full-time employees at the zoo currently. The other costs you can see, utilities, obviously, life support systems at the zoo are vital and can't be challenged, and supplies and materials, including animal food. So most of our costs are tied up in the people who do the work at the zoo. The people who do the work at the zoo are state employees, and we've seen significant increases in the last 2.5 years in the overall compensation levels for those employees based on negotiations. I believe those were absolutely appropriate things to do, but it's generated about $1.7 million in new expenses for the zoo with the same FTE equivalent that we've had the beginning of that period. So this is, again, that's the steep cost increases that we've seen are something we're just not able to keep up with the current level of our revenues. Again, the $1.7 million hole is part of it, and then the utilities, animal food going up. And we expect to see continued rise in a lot of those costs with the general trend of inflation. And so this is a statement we make that I think kind of hits it. In order to operate the zoo, most of our costs are fixed. We have to have people taking care of the animals, whether it's 10 below outside or a beautiful summer day. And so it generally costs about the same amount to operate the zoo, whether 600 people have come on a rainy Monday morning or 6,000 people on a busy summer afternoon. That's where this variability in our earned revenue becomes such a challenge. That said, the zoo's worked hard to deal with this. We are trying to find other ways to generate revenue. We're increasing the contributions from our foundation by $250,000 just this year. They're also committed to raise money for new exhibits and new attractions at the zoo to help generate attendance in the future. We'll be reopening Discovery Bay, as I mentioned, which we're very excited about this fall. And later in the summer, we're opening an entirely privately funded attraction, a nature-based play area about out on our northern trail called the Hannafil Family Wild Woods, which we know our members in particular are going to be very appreciative of. We're looking at projects that actually generate additional revenue beyond just the admission fee to the zoo. Last year, with private money, we built a conservation carousel. It's generating about $100,000 in completely new revenue that helps our bottom line this year and going forward. We're looking at partnering with companies to do zip lines and other activities this summer. So we're committed to doing $100,000 or more every year in new revenue streams not connected directly to our attendance-driving exhibits. Obviously, we are looking for capital investment support to continue to enhance the zoo. If there's a bill this year, we certainly hope to be part of it. And then we are looking at adding premium experiences where we can, with people who are interested in going deeper into the zoo experience, can pay a little bit more for that opportunity and do behind-the-scenes tours. We're even looking at things like shark diving activities in our aquariums. So we've done a lot to try to generate additional revenue, knowing the cost pressures were there. And then on the other side, certainly we've taken a very hard look at expenses. Coming into the fiscal year, we knew we had this deficit from the previous year, and we cut about $400,000 out of our budget of existing costs coming into the fiscal year. After our first quarter, which is when we make hay, the summer is the big, that's when we kind of know where the year's headed. We did not have a good first quarter, and we made some very significant cuts. $500,000 in expenses, including personnel. We had seven individuals who, unfortunately, we had to lay off. And then many reductions in other costs, including our repair and maintenance budget and our marketing budgets. So we believe we've been very responsive to the point that we, to the extent we can be, with the cost pressures and the reduced attendance over the last year. But we're at a point where we believe any further significant budget cuts is going to have a very significantly negative impact on the guest experience at the zoo. We will have to close exhibits if we continue to cut. The staff at the zoo are now at an absolute kind of baseline level. And the only, as you saw, with 70% of our total cost being personnel, that's really the only place we can go. So we're very hopeful that we can, the governor's budget request will be something that will guide all of you and the House and your decision making about an increase in the upcoming biennium as well as the deficiency request this year. Again, the governor has recommended the $1.5 million in a supplemental appropriation for this fiscal year to balance our budget and to avoid any additional major cuts at the zoo. And then for the upcoming biennium, the governor is recommending $8.25 million annually, which would get us back to that basically one-third of our operating budget that, again, we've historically been at that level or higher, and is the national average for zoos of our type. And we think that keeping our eye on that number, that one-third, if the state can provide about one-third of that operating support, we can take responsibility for the rest, as we have, I think, very successfully over the last decade with earned revenue and contributed income to continue to have the great zoo that Minnesotans deserve. We've, in the midst of these fiscal challenges, our board have put together a five-year strategic plan that in many ways I think will serve as the, well, it really is the template for how we're going to go forward. And our, we've basically developed three major goals for what we want to do in the next 5 years. And the very first of those goals is to develop and implement a sustainable business model for the zoo, for a 21st century conservation-focused zoo. That will involve this recalibration, we believe, with the state support, but it's also about us being more, even more entrepreneurial and more focused on developing new business. Our second goal, also very much related, is to position the zoo as a recognized conservation organization. Too often, I think, people think of the zoo primarily as a recreational destination, and we have nothing against fun, and we're very pleased that we provide that when people come to the zoo. But we are here to serve a much higher calling, which is what we can do to actually help save animals in nature. And finally, in order to be successful at that, we know we have to continue to deliver fantastic, exceptional guest experiences. So we have done that with some of our recent additions at the zoo, but we have plans to continue that development, again, in public-private partnership with the state and the community, to create the great zoo that Minnesotans, again, have come to enjoy and to expect into the future. So thank you very much for the opportunity to present our request, and I'd be happy to take any questions you might have.
Any comments or questions? So, Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. You mentioned 350 people or 350 FTEs as far as staff at the zoo?
Mr. Chair, Senator Weber, it's approximately 350 FTEs, but I'll ask Mary to
actually, I'm going to do a quick correction. It's approximately 250 FTEs.
Okay.
Highly seasonal.
Okay. I was just curious because I was looking at your overview.
Yes.
You, for 14 and 15, you had 235 to 225. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. The correct number is around 250 total FTE, including the seasonal aspect of our workforce.
Okay. Thank you.
That's why I brought Mary.
That's why I'm here.
And so what we're looking at as far as your budget request is $1.5 million in the deficiency bill, correct? And then is the 2.825, is that an increase in the governor's recommendation? Is that?
Mr. Chair, the 2.85 would be an increase over our current budget, our current base budget, which is 5.425.
Okay.
So it's the governor's recommended increase over our current base.
Okay. And what did you say about your benefactors? They are at the max, or you anticipate being able to get more from them? You have some big names on that list, it looks like. So.
Mr. Chair, the many contributors to the zoo through the Minnesota Zoo Foundation, we continue to ask for more support from them, and they have consistently delivered it. However, the overall budget for the foundation is a much smaller, very small percentage of our total $25 million operating budget. So we are expecting, and the foundation has committed to, an increase over the next several years of about 17% in general operating support. But in addition to that, they're raising hundreds of thousands, in fact, millions of dollars for programs that are not part of the general operation of the zoo, including capital projects, including some of the conservation programming that we do outside of our base budget. So they're certainly have shown the ability to grow their support for the zoo, and we're going to continue that and continue the partnership. But again, as an overall proportion of our operating budget, it's relatively small.
The bonding money you've got, when do you anticipate seeing the results of that?
Mr. Chair, we're very pleased that in May we'll be reopening Discovery Bay, which was a major portion of the bonding allocation from last year and the previous allocation. So we will essentially have a brand new marine animal exhibit opening up this summer, which we're, again, going to be aggressively marketing and get people out there to see the Hawaiian monk seals and a number of other new species, jellyfish and sea dragons and others that will be part of our aquarium complex that was in need of major renovation, and we've now just about completed that work.
Mr. Chair, I would like to just mention that the opening of Discovery Bay in May is factored into our current budget, factored into our current projected deficit as well as cash shortfall.
Projected in what way? In what way, that you'll be making more money when it opens, or that it cost you that much?
our budget, as you can imagine, because it's driven largely by attendance and membership, is forecast. based on trends and what we expect to occur in terms of new exhibits and other offerings. So we've factored in that Discovery Bay opening as part of our revenue forecast for this current year.
So is Discovery Bay the only thing that came out of the bonding dollars, or was there, or is there something going on that it will open in another year or so?
Mr. Chair, in addition to monies to complete Discovery Bay, the last bonding bill included $5 million for planning, design, and infrastructure work related to the Heart of the Zoo 2 project, which is essentially the entry area of the zoo and will include, when we complete it, a new snow monkey exhibit, a new meerkat exhibit, a new retail center, and a new welcoming space for our guests. However, we do not have the full funding to complete that. We will be, if there is a capital investment bill, we will be seeking additional funding to complete Heart of the Zoo Phase 2, as well as we are looking to raise private funds for that as well. So the money we receive will put us in a shovel-ready position should there be another bonding bill this year or next year. And we are optimistic that that's a project that will have revenue generating and attendance driving potential significance.
Okay. All right. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Senator Westrup.
Sure. As to the deficiency or the funds going forward in the foundation, might it be helpful if the state included language for a match for you to turn around and go out to the foundation donors and say, hey, we can leverage $1 million if we raise $500,000, or you pick the number. But I think in some instances that can be very effective in raising matching dollars or private dollars. And so I'm wondering if something would move forward, if it would be helpful to have maybe some criteria that would help leverage some of that.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that is often a very good strategy, and we have used it particularly for capital projects where that kind of fundraising pressure is can be helpful for the foundation. I would say, as president of the foundation as well as Zoo, that I know that the pressure is already being felt very much by our Board of Trustees, and they're responding with increased levels of giving and a much more aggressive fundraising strategy than we've had before. And finally, I would add that we've just in the last 2 years ago completed the largest capital campaign in the history of the foundation, generating over $28 million that supported the zoo. So I think the pressure is already there, and the desire to continue to do more is certainly there with the foundation and the trustees. I'm not sure a specific match requirement would be any more incentive than we already have. But thank you for the suggestion.
Is this the first time you've come in for deficiency funding?
This is the first time, Mr. Chair, this is the first time I have been in for a deficiency request. I started at the zoo in the year 2000. In 1998, the zoo had been before the legislature with a deficiency request, and I can tell you that my most fervent hope when I came to the zoo was that we would never be in this situation again. And for 15 years, we have not had to come in. It's just the combination, really the perfect storm, I think, of these increased costs and slightly declining revenues that have brought us to this point.
All right. Any other comments or questions? All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate the presentation. I think we're dealing with a deficiency tonight in Finance Committee, so you're excused, I guess.
And, thank you.
Wednesday we have, who do we have coming in? So Wednesday we have PCA coming in, and I'm pretty sure they'll take up the whole 2 hours, so we'll try and get started at noon, provided there's nobody having cake in here beforehand. So other than that, meeting is adjourned.